Hello. In this episode of the Diabolical Podcast, I want to share some spoilers with you for the movie Muppet Treasure Island.
No!
This is Diabolical, the comedy podcast that dissects films' most dastardly schemes and has us compete to improve them. I'm your host, Gaz, and this week's special episode's movie is Muppet Treasure Island. So, Peril Pals, pour yourself an illicit tot of rum and tune up your singing voice. And let's get diabolical! Hello, and welcome to this week's special pod, wherein I am joined by panel of Peril members Craig.
Hello.
Ben.
Hello.
Adam.
Hello.
And our very special guest, it's literary agent extraordinaire, Nemini Craven. How are you this morning, Nemini?
Hello, I'm very well, thank you. Very happy to be here.
I'm glad to hear it. It's lovely to have you.
Feeling a little bit like the sort of person who goes on Mastermind and says, says my specialist subject is going to be comparing Treasure Island by Robert Louis Stevenson and Muppet Treasure Island. And everyone goes, that's not a subject. And then discovering anyway that they get 0 points and the only writer they've ever heard of is Shakespeare. So I'm setting myself up for a fall. But also feeling like I've been preparing for this all my life as well, of course.
Oh, good. I think you're ready.
Yeah. Well, at least since 2020.
First of all, our Ben has his traditional list of quick-fire, scientifically determined questions. So I'll hand you over to Ben.
Yes, so this is the part of the show where we ask our guests some very scientifically determined questions in order to find out how diabolical you are. It's a little bit like a Rorschach test, so just answer with the first thing that comes in your mind, don't think too deeply about it. Kermit or Gonzo?
Gonzo.
Good.
It's like a very worried psychologist noting that.
Peg leg or eye patch?
Oh, eye patch, of course.
Correct answer. Fiction or non-fiction?
Fiction. I mean, there's always fiction. It's all fiction anyway, isn't it? So I think it's
that's a good point.
Fiction.
Yeah. Book, TV or film?
I've got to say book. I'm a literary agent. The book is at the heart of everything.
Good. Writing or editing?
I think part of the same process, really. So let's just call it all writing.
Okay. Daffodils or leeks?
Oh, you know I'm Welsh. Daffodils or leeks? Well, despite the fact that there was a boy once in a nice Eisteddfod or an assembly in school in Bridgend where I grew up who ate the leek that he was wearing pinned to his shirt. Does anyone remember? If you're Welsh, I feel there's a Welsh person in the audience.
We're all Welsh.
Yeah.
We all had leeks and daffodils on our shirts, yeah?
Yeah.
We're all Welsh.
Yeah.
Peter Davison. Doctor Who that used to do that had a leek pinned to his jacket.
Oh, he had the pin. Yeah. He had the pinned leek, but this boy ate it and then was promptly sick in the school hall, unsurprisingly, having gnashed on a raw leek. So I think I'll go for daffodils, but I wouldn't eat those either.
Yeah. Very wise.
Super furry animals.
Ooh.
Or manic street preachers.
Oh. Well, it's got to be the super phase, really. But I love that, you know, it's hard to choose. That's like choosing between family, which actually is quite easy to do.
Yeah.
I'll go for super furries. I've got to, really. Yeah.
Yes. You represent Griff Rees, so we thought, yeah, it's probably a good idea.
Yeah, for his books, yeah. But I love a bit of Mannix as well. And apparently Richie from the Mannix, I think this is something that David Quantick discovered somehow or another. Apparently, sadly in the context, really, but he was a fan of Reggie Perrin. I mean, who's not?
Oh, wow.
Who is not a fan of Reggie Perrin? But that makes it rather poignant, really, doesn't it?
Yeah,
but,
wow.
Yeah, but we love the Mammoths.
Mm.
And you mentioned David Quantick there, a guest of ours previously.
Yeah.
Ricky's Hand or Ricky Martin?
Ricky's Hand, you mean the one that comes and becomes like a sort of strange super that's not actually Ricky's hand?
Right,
the
yeah.
Thing,
exactly.
It? It's a bit of a, a bit of a red herring or a red hand or whatever. I'll go for Ricky's Hand.
Good.
That's a very good novel by David Quantick that only David Quantick could have written, I think.
Yeah.
It could only have come from the mind of David Quantick. Is Ricky Martin in it, though? Hang on. I feel like Ricky Martin could make an appearance, but anyway.
He might be mentioned because Ricky's a paparazzo, so he might bump into him in Miami.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. We're coming to the business end of the questions now. Pineapple on pizza, yes please, or get it out of my sight?
I'll say yes please for nostalgia's sake. You know, I think as a child I liked that. We also as a child growing up in Bridgend, there was a kebab shop that also did pizzas that tasted sort of deliciously deep fried. I'm not sure what they did with them, but they had one chicken tikka pizza, which I found delicious as a child. And in fact, seafaring connection. So my dad was big into sailing, and the place he did it mainly was on a reservoir that was next to the steelworks in Portalbert. So, you know, that backdrop that Michael Sheen has now got in his thingy, the way, and that was where we used to go sailing. So it's like all the sort of belching furnaces and everything.
Yeah, I can smell Port Talbot now you've said Port Talbot out loud.
Yes. Yeah. And so in order to sit, and my dad, and I regret it now because I feel like I should have been Ellen MacArthur or something, but my dad did eventually, because he was used to shout at me and I was used to get hit around the head so much by the boom and thing, trying to learn how to sail and keep up with my dad, and he'd be like, get out there on the trapeze, etc. But he had to bribe me to go sailing with him by promising to buy me a chicken tikka pizza afterwards. But I don't think I could have pineapple on the chicken tikka pizza. I think that would lead me to be sick, like the boy who ate the loaf.
Yeah.
It's funny how every town in Wales has one of those kebab shops that sells pizza.
At least
one. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. If you could steal any writing credit from history and get away with it, what would it be?
Oh, that's a good one. That's a really good one. What do I wish I'd written?
For example, our Adam wishes he'd written all the Mills and Boons.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'd be living on some sort of tropical island.
In Mills and Boon, millionaires and billionaires, more like.
Mm-hmm. In all seriousness, actually, I really admire the sort of early Patrick Melrose novels by Edward St. Albans. So I think, gosh, yeah, I love the writing. I think he does amazing things. Also Hilary Mantel, quite frankly.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, because I think, you know, thinking at what I love about Treasure Island and adventure novels, I mean, she has so much spirit of that in the opening of the Wolf Hall novels, yeah. Really, I think, in terms of that, just the range of it, and also the narration, how it kind of sweeps around. I could happily have been Hilary Mantel.
Wonderful. And the final question: your life depends on erasing one of the Muppets from history. Who do you pick?
Oh God! Hang on. Now I have to think of one that's really expendable. The Expendables. Has anyone else already answered this?
I don't think so.
You're the first.
No.
Remember, these are scientifically determined questions.
I also feel like a bit of a fraud now, because I'm thinking, like, do I actually know all of their names, etc.?
Right.
Could this also incorporate Sesame Street? And
if it doesn't, I'm going to be in trouble when we get to the plan section.
So let's establish now that it does.
I was going through the history of, like, Jim Henson and, you know, remembering Labyrinth and all of that, you know. I just feel like the whole thing might crumble if one...
It's like a house of cards.
Baby Yoda?
Does Baby Yoda count as a deduction?
So. Oh, no
yeah,
way.
Yeah, definitely lose Baby Yoda.
Grogu.
I can't be bothered to
call him by his proper
Baby
name.
Yoda.
With those eyes, oh!
let's just go straight to Yoda's death scene. I prefer that.
All right. Well, I've been totting up the scores, and certainly with that final answer,
yeah,
you're going to get a diabolical broccoli rating of 11.
Mm.
That means you're three florets of broccoli more diabolical than David Quantic. Congratulations.
As it should be, the baddie agent.
He'll be livid, no doubt.
I like it.
So let's move on to the film. And I'm going to ask Nemini, why did you pick Muppet Treasure Island for this week's film?
I became quite ludicrously passionate about Muppet Treasure Island, partly through being forced to watch it, you know, more than a million times, really, by my son, who started watching it in 2020. And then it was really on repeat.
Wow.
When I saw the premise of the podcast, genuinely the first thing that came to mind was Muppet Treasure Island does improve on the plot of Treasure Island by Robert Louis Stevenson. You know, so I was very vehement in that belief. And then I was like, that falls apart quite quickly. No, but I do actually think that it's an incredibly skillfully done adaptation that streamlines, you know, a novel that was written as a serialization, you know, in a magazine for young boys about adventure, etc. So it then, you know, the novel does have that sort of episodic thing where you go to the next bit and the next bit and the next bit, and you spend a lot of time going backwards and forwards with Jim floating around in, I think, what he calls the first and worst coracle ever made. It's not the first coracle, that's got to be Welsh, hasn't it? That was actually influenced, though, because Robert Louis Stevenson, I think, drew the map of Treasure Island first. So that was his starting point. And he drew it. I mean, also, Robert Louis Stevenson, totally one of my literary and life heroes, no question. I mean, so he drew the map of Treasure Island for his stepson as a kind of just a fun thing.
Oh, okay.
So then I think that he wrote the plot of Treasure Island somewhat around this map. So all that, like, going like, which bay are we in now? It's like they're moving from one bay to the other, which also does brilliantly resolve the plot in lots of ways in the novel, because the Hispaniola sort of drifts between these bays. Like, you could have changed it. He's like, no, I had to move between the bays. No, I wrote it like that because that's how I drew the map. When I discovered that, I was like, well, there you go. So maybe the Muppets were like, okay, so you built this a lot around a map that you drew, but we're going to streamline things somewhat. But also, you know, you've got Jim at the heart of it in the novel. And I think probably I was completely won over by the heart of the film really being Long John Silver and that being Tim Curry. And no, it's Tim Curry. So that's going to improve any number of things a little bit, or just add a bit of magic.
Yeah, we're big Tim Curry fans. This is the third time Tim Curry's been our featured villain.
Oh, wow.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah, and it won't be the last, yeah.
You did It.
We did It, and we did Rocky Horror Picture Show.
So when you say that Muppet Treasure Island improves upon the book, did you mean structurally, or are there other areas?
I think I was being a bit facetious when I said that. So we're going to just say that it's more about maybe a love of Tim Curry, loving the actual adaptation that Muppet Treasure Island pulls off. So, you know, Jerry Jewell, all those, the crowd working on that. The music's pretty good. So it usually comes up whenever anyone's like, what's the best film soundtrack? You know, and whatever examples they will give of that. And I've always just got to answer Muppet Treasure Island.
It's very good.
Because I was thinking about favourite bits in it, and a lot of them are the songs, which is pretty unusual for me, anyway. Mm. But I think the songs are hilarious. I suppose there's like a parallel, isn't there? So Robert Louis Stevenson constructed the plot of Treasure Island around a drawing that he did, and probably the Muppet Treasure Island has to construct itself around things like getting the Swedish chef in. So that's when they decide to bring in a little bit of the cannibalism side story. And it's like, how else do you think we're going to get in it? And also having to have Miss Piggy. So I suppose one arguable plot improvement would be replacing Benjamin Gunn. You know, the famous exchange in the novel, is this Ben Gunner man? I do not know, sir, says Jim. I'm not very sure whether he's sane. Well, in Muppet Treasure Island, it's Benjamina Gunn we've got. Yeah. So we've got the Maroony and Temptress Benjamina Gunn, who, you know, props to Benjamina Gunn, not only fucked Captain Flint, but also Long John. You know, right. I don't know where Kermit was. He ditched her at the altar. Oh, yeah, Captain Smollett, I should say. Smollett?
Yeah.
As ditched Benjamina Gunn, Mina, as he calls her in it. And, you know, so then she's time back to the States. You know, she's like no holds barred with Kermit the Frog. Flings him into the great big gong in the sort of sacrificial ceremony with this kind of pig tribe she's got around her. Sort of dubious political correctness, but...
Well, I almost jumped out of my seat when Piggy showed up. She was like a shot in the arm. My only note would be, I wish she'd been in it more, because as soon as she showed up, I realised how much I'd missed her energy from the whole Muppet setup.
Yeah.
Really great to see Piggy show up and kind of steal all the scenes.
I think it works, leaving it that late, though.
You're hungry for her by then.
He gives it a shot in the arm, and just her first line, Bonsoir, mes amis.
Yeah.
Bonsoir, mes amis.
Over in the slow motion, flicking the head.
Oh, and when she falls down the steps, like, ah, ah, and she's like, oh, right, stupid Andy. I just adore. I mean, that's the Frank Oz effect as well, isn't it? Total legend. Speaking of Baby Yoda, etc.
Yeah.
Here's a question for you. Is this the first time we get to see her legs?
Surely not.
Oh, God. Because actually, she is hung up.
Yeah.
The peril, the moment of great peril for her and Kermit and of that wonderful love song. Love led us here. They're strung up, aren't they? And slowly the fire is crackling away under the ropes that are holding them over the edge of the cliff. And then her rope snaps and she's got that great sort of like squeal and then it pans up to Kermit holding her onto her by her legs or on his... They put the bulging. Bigger eyes on Kermit so his eyes are like bulging out of his head. I've got the thing where his mouth puckers forward in that way. So you do see her legs quite a lot. I feel like I've seen Miss Piggy crossing her legs on occasion and other things.
Yeah, they would have almost certainly had her doing the can-can or something on SNL at some point. Yeah. showing some thigh to like Mark Hamill or somebody like that.
You know, when Kermit was holding Miss Piggy, his arms start to stretch.
Yeah.
I think they do that joke twice because they also did it with Gonzo, and that is so funny. Gonzo on the ship with his long...
And he loves it. He's so like, funny. Yes! Yes! And it's like, he likes it! Let's torture the rat! And they put him on the rack or whatever it is where they're stretching him out. He's a masochist, isn't he? He kind of likes the sort of putting himself in these situations of peril and pain.
Yeah.
Is that a characteristic that he always has?
My son is really fascinated by the bit where he talks about having his trousers full of starfish. For some reason, really stuck in his mind, and he sort of seems to like that as well.
Yeah, I think originally on the show, he was a kind of Evel Knievel analogue, wasn't he? He used to do daredevil stunts and that kind of thing.
Yeah, that's why I kind of went for Gonzo. I don't know, there's something about Gonzo.
Yeah,
I wonder why they chose him for Dickens in Christmas Carol, because he's perfect, but he's not the first Muppet that springs to mind, probably.
It's him and Rizzo together, isn't it, doing the kind of narration.
Yeah.
So I think that it's just that sort of double act works quite well, doesn't it?
Yeah, it works really well.
The access to it, and I like the bit where they're like, this bit's too scary, we're going to come back in A Christmas Carol, which actually works quite well, because that bit is actually terrifying with the Ghost of Christmas Future and Christmas Carol.
Absolutely.
This is going to haunt my child's dreams forevermore.
you mentioned the starfish in the pants joke.
Mm.
I love the payoff to that later where he uses them like shuriken and throws them.
Yes!
You don't see where he's got them from. But...
Because he's got these ninja moves, hasn't he? So he's sort of a ninja. Yeah, that's right. And the other great thing about Gonzo is, you know, everyone else, like Rizzo the rat Kermit the Frog, Miss Piggy, and there's like Gonzo's just a whatever. And that's kind of a running joke, isn't it?
Yeah.
Whatever. But they never quite resolve what he actually is. Hose nose.
Okay, well, let's just move on and get some quick thoughts from the panel on the film. So let's begin with Adam.
Unfortunately, I couldn't watch this with my family, which I think is probably the best way to watch The Muppets is with your kids. Mm. Yeah, I was watching it at work. I was a bit tired. I didn't properly pay attention to it all the way through because I was so tired.
Not during working hours. He lives at work, yeah. You see.
I live at work, yeah. Not at the moment. I'm home now, but I do live at work normally.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I did enjoy it. It's not my favourite Muppets adaptation. I prefer Christmas Carol. I think that's the ultimate for me. But wow. I love Tim Curry. He's the pantomime villain turned up to 11, isn't he, on this? And he's just perfect for the role.
Yeah.
And he's got his it laugh throughout as well and constantly pulling that out of the bag to send a shiver down your spine if you've been affected by the It film, so which we all have. Mm. So I'd enjoy that. And it also reminded me of my ultimate Treasure Island universe adaptation, which is the absolutely awesome Black Sails, which I am going to revisit after watching this.
Oh. Do you have another favourite adaptation of Treasure Island, aside from Muppet?
No, I don't know Black Sails, actually.
It's a series, isn't
absolutely
it?
Absolutely brilliant.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
it's on Prime.
I hadn't heard of that.
Just trying to think what other adaptations I've seen of Treasure Island. It's the Disney one I've never seen.
Yeah, maybe that's the one I'm aware of.
Yeah.
I think it's a very hard thing to do, and I think that's a genuine point about it is so well-suited to this kind of...
Yeah.
Muppet thing where it sort of slightly forces the hand on the plot because they've got their own agenda and their own things they need to get in. I mean, all that stuff, you know, all that the rich pickings from Treasure Island are there, you know, the Black Spot, Blind Pew. I mean, Blind Pew in Muppet Treasure Island, that's got to be, and, you know, not forgetting Billy Connolly as Billy Bones. I mean, you know, I think like Miss Piggy coming later, you like that whole beginning sequence with Billy Bones. I mean, talk about turning it up to 11. He also does that brilliantly at the beginning. And you've got Blind Pea, and I just think he's one of the great, I mean, the beginning of the novel as well is just like a masterclass in setting all of these like foreboding figures up, and Blind Pew appears and he's actually much more terrifying than I think anyone else. Like when he grabs Jim's arm in this vice-like grip and weirdly they sort of remain kind of a little bit true to that in Muppet Treasure Island, I think. And Blind Pew also with two eye patches, you know, is just think, there you go, you know, he's the ultimate pirate, basically. Like, that's the logical conclusion of being a pirate, I think, is to, you know, achieve that level, the boss level of land. I just love that.
Well, let's hear Ben's thoughts on Muppet Treasure Island.
I'm sure you've guessed by now, but I loved it. The singing, the dancing, the absurdity. It was just joy from start to finish. So I'm giving it, if you're looking for a good time with no strings attached, then this film is for you.
What's that of?
And that's out of 8, because pirates seem to love the number 8 for some reason. It never worked out why.
Craig, let's hear your thoughts on Muppet Treasure Island.
I thought it was wonderful, yeah. It was a really nice throwback to a time of filmmaking when things were done practically and well lit.
Yeah.
I'd forgotten Kevin Bishop was in this, and I thought he was so good as Jim. Made me wish that he'd had more of a film career, because I first became aware of him, you know, through his BBC sketch show, and then later saw him in acting roles like... did you see that the snooker thing that he was in? I think it was...
No.
It was about the rivalry between Hurricane Higgins and Steve Davis. It's really good.
What?
It was on BBC. It's fantastic. But watching him in this, it struck me that I wished that somebody George Lucas, Ron Howard, had made the Star Wars prequels in the 90s instead of, you know, later on, because he would have been a great Anakin Skywalker, Kevin Bishop, and having some sophisticated Muppets around him instead of all that passable CGI that we got in the Phantom Menace. And just thinking about, would we have more easily grasped that Star Wars was a children's film had it come out as a sort of dark 90s children's film and enjoyed it more? So that was one of my takeaways from it. But also, I just love Muppets. And anytime Muppets show up in a film, I'm happy. Forgetting Sarah Marshall, the Muppet Dracula musical, incredible. And the Muppets in this don't disappoint. I love how they're all cast and just the silly things like the rats on the pleasure cruise.
I love the New Jersey rats going on.
Yeah, they're brilliant. And, you know, Waldorf and Statler on the hall at the start there.
Yeah.
So this was a treat for me. And I knew instantly when you suggested it, I was ready to bite your hand off, because I thought this is something that I never would have thought to pick. But I was so pleased that it came up.
Yeah, exactly. And usually Gaz makes us watch very gory, bloody stuff, so it's really nice to have something that I can sit back and enjoy.
This is the first film we've watched with cannibalism in it, though, so...
True.
Yeah.
As for my own thoughts on the film, I suppose I had a strange childhood looking back at it. I'm not particularly a fan of Bond, not particularly a fan of Muppets. I never really saw the Muppets until I was an adult, I would imagine. Even that BBC revival.
Muppets Tonight,
Yeah, that they did. I remember Pierce Brosnan being on it in the advert, but I never watched it. So I've got no real attachment to the Muppets. But I do enjoy them. I like Kermit. I like the way his mouth crinkles with the puppeteer. Miss Piggy is hilarious in general and in this particular film. Like Craig, I enjoyed the lighting. Some of the backdrops are genuinely beautiful to simulate the horizon. There's some lovely Miami Vice style pastel peaches, and the songs, like Nemone noted, are all fantastic. I think there's, what, four or five of them? All of them are a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's Hans Zimmer, isn't it? So the composer is Hans Zimmer of the music.
Oh, shocked.
And then the songs are by Cynthia Weil and Barry Mann, who wrote so much stuff, and they also co-wrote with Phil Spector You've Lost That Loving Feeling, as performed by the Righteous Brothers originally, I think. So I mean, you know, and the song at the end is by Ziggy Marley, so
Feels real
legit.
Well, Hans Zimmer always gives good pirate theme tunes, doesn't he?
Amazing. Yeah. That must be on his CV.
I feel like Hans Zimmer has been around forever, but he's not that old, is he? He's like 66. I feel like he's been around anyway, but people are crazy about Hans Zimmer.
Yeah, it's a shame that he's sort of scaled back his film work in favour of touring selfishly. I would quite like to see him on tour.
Kind of things like light shows and big venue things now? Yeah.
He's up on stage playing guitar with his orchestra, rocking out. It looks like a fun night. Just to go back slightly, I actually disagree with Adam's opinion on Tim Curry. I don't think it's a turned up to 11 panto performance. The subtlety and the surprising emotional depth that he brings to the character really... Like I say, it took me by surprise. I was expecting it to be a very big performance from Tim Curry playing a pirate. I was expecting something more akin to the sea captain on The Simpsons.
Mm.
But he's quite small. He's surprisingly warm and genuinely warm towards Jim, particularly at the end, where he says they would have made a good team.
This is the thing. I think this is what I was saying, is that Tim Curry, this is what Tim Curry brings to it. I mean, he fully make sense of that kind of the movements of like in the novel. I think there's a bit where Jim is saying, "Oh, you've changed sides again," as he under his breath or something like that to Long John. And it's quite close to the end of the novel, and you're thinking, "Yes, you know, have you got it yet?" That he's going to be a traitor to the last girl, kind of thing. But Long John kind of has that, can bring out that like love hate thing, or like why you would be drawn in to that. So he, And also the fact that he is a kind of like sexy, you kind of think, okay, you know, you can fall in love with him as well. And but you're right, the subtlety is there. And in fact, I rewatched it again with my son the other night. And when it gets to the point at the end where Long John is making off with the treasure, and so Jim has kind of got him in his sights, and Jim has the whistle, so he can, you know, blow the whistle on him. And Long John has a pistol. And so, you know, it's that moment of tension, what's going to happen here? And Long John says, I can't hurt you, sort of thing. And there's that genuine affection between them. And Jim looks quite close to tears. And my son said, I almost cried. But he said there was an occasion when I almost cried at this bit. It's like really moving, you know. And he was saying, how does he cry? He was like talking about Kevin Bishop's acting. He was like, how is he mainly crying? You know, and then genuinely, you're right. Like the performances are brilliant. And Kevin Bishop is just, you know, gorgeous in this. So, yeah, I think that's quite an amazing thought that he could have been a good Anakin Skywalker, because he is really beautiful as well.
Yeah. I completely agree with that. I think Tim Curry's performance is really kind of nuanced and warm, believable. Yeah, I don't think it's over the top at all. And I as you expected, in a Muppet movie of all things, for him to be kind of overblown and silly and mugging, I think we've come to expect that because of the recent Muppet movies where everybody seems to think that that's their job.
That's a very different energy, isn't it, than the recent ones? But on the other hand, you have. I was thinking one of my favourite bits is where at the end the Muppets actually turn on Long John and they give him the black spot. And he's like in manacles or whatever. And then he's like, you dare to give me the black spot. And this does actually kind of happen in the novel as well, where he charms his way out of the black spot. But he sort of turns into this weird, like, sort of almost American style preacher where he's like, you put the black spot on the page of the Bible, and he's like, Satan is hating his pokers for you, and they're all like, oh, we're sorry, Long John. We're sorry. And he just loves that bit where he's like, fall on your knees. So I think he does give himself a little bit of camp leeway in it as well. So we've got a bit of everything. We've got him from his range from Amadeus, from the Peter Shaffer days through to whatever the campus thing you can think of.
Is that maybe because he respects Jim so much and he has a familial, like a fatherly kind of relationship with Jim, but the crew he doesn't respect at all. He thinks they're all idiots. And almost every interaction he has with the crew seems like that, like a sort of a show, and he's very false with them and he's very genuine with Jim. Like the other thing that happens in this is he quite easily talks Mr. Arrow into giving him his keys. I'm sure that can't happen in the book, does it?
Samuel Arrow is long gone by that point. He's been tipped over the side of the boat or whatever to make him for another first mate at that point. So yeah, that's another good thing, is bringing back Samuel Arrow as Sam Eagle. I think that
was I love his voice.
There's another key character in the novel called Israel Hands, but I think he's completely gone from this. I think it's all on Kermit and Piggy, and it's all on Jim and Long John. And that just obviously that works so well in a film.
Yeah.
And in a family film. So just streamlined completely. And that doesn't have that episodic thing.
Yeah.
Which is just interesting as well in terms of thinking about adaptation really and what works for a very, as you say, this kind of very successful 90s film, which has something that the more recent Muppet films perhaps don't.
Yeah. Christmas Carol's the same. Michael Caine's performance in that is one of the best Scrooges we've ever had.
Yeah.
I think they both kind of understand that their job among the Muppets isn't to join in with the kind of the buffoonery. It's to be
totally the
core.
I know, and I love that. One thing I do really love in both Muppet Treasure Island and A Christmas Carol is that moment where the human gaze doesn't quite lock to the Muppet gaze. You have that. You have that much more with Michael Caine.
Yeah,
but it's like this slight dead-eyed thing that comes over the humans, where it's like they're not quite looking in the right direction of the Muppet, or for some reason they can't. They can't replicate like locking a gaze in the same way as they can on film between two humans. I think the thing for me I do think Muppet Treasure Island is probably a superior adaptation. I think that Christmas Carol is probably easier to adapt anyway to film and has been done so much, obviously. Yeah.
One last question for Nemini before we move on to the competition round. Is there any other novel that you think would be ideal to get the Muppet treatment on film?
This is a wonderful question. I mean, this is such an important question.
Indeed.
What I feel like a revival is due. I mean, it's a hard one, but I did have a thought recently that I feel like this must have been done, but I was thinking Hamlet the Panto has got to be a goer, you know, with Claudius, and you've got, you know, and then you can have Hamlet appearing behind Claudius, and Hamlet's like, he's behind you, and ruins the whole thing. But I thought, could you have a Muppet Hamlet?
I think you'd have to cast Miss Piggy as Hamlet.
Yeah, lots of jokes about Danish
God.
Bacon.
That's it. That's it. But that's all right, because there is a venerable tradition of Hamlet being played by women. I think that makes sense. That sort of checks out. So that could be it. Because, I mean, the obvious thing would be to think of a slightly melancholic Kermit the Frog, you know. But actually, Miss Piggy would take it to the level that it needs. I got quite into that idea. Also, some friends of mine have made a film where basically one of my friends during COVID was feeling a bit despondent as an out-of-work actor and started with another friend meeting in Grand Theft Auto, and they made it their mission to put on a production of Hamlet within the ultra-violent world of Grand Theft Auto. They were like, shout out to anyone who wants to audition for Hamlet. You know, bearing in mind this was during pandemic, so I was like, I've always wanted to play Hamlet. So I auditioned using my nephew's PS5. It had to be a PS5, I think. And I was like, I know nothing. But anyway, he had the PS5. He had the Grand Theft Auto login. So I auditioned as DJ Phil. My avatar was DJ Phil, which is my nephew's from a teenager. And I did my audition. But I didn't really know how to do it. So my nephew was with me. And he just kind of, like, I was trying to do my bit at the end with Laertes, and then he just, like, shot up Laertes. So it was quite hilarious. It was like, all right, come on then, let's just go, alternative ending, let's go and get Claudius. But it's that they've made it now as a documentary that I don't appear in it, which is a good thing. Only in my audition, which is probably quite funny. But the film has been made, and I think it's really interesting.
Yeah. So
Grand Theft what's Hamlet. The name of the film?
Grand Theft Hamlet.
Okay. Of course.
Perfect.
Yeah. No, it's brilliant. So I'd say not a novel, obviously, but a play, Hamlet, I would go for. The Muppet Hamlet. But you're right. You do point out a key thing which I hadn't considered. The Danish aspect or the ham aspect.
Yeah.
They would definitely have a hawk Muppet and a handsaw Muppet, and Piggy can't tell which is which.
Yeah, exactly.
Little gags good. Like that.
This is what makes it such a highbrow podcast.
Before we go any further, I'm just going to thank you for listening to our show so far. Thank you. If you like what you hear, please do pass it on. Recommend Diabolical to a friend, relative, work colleague, or well-wisher who you think will enjoy what we do. We want to get the show into as many ears as possible, and you can help us do that with just a few words. Have you listened to Diabolical Evil Schemes Done Better? It's really funny and very interesting, you would probably say, whilst reminding them that we have a website at www.diabolicalpod.com. And do remember that you can also follow them on socials at DiabolicalPod, you would almost certainly add. Again, thanks for doing that. Arrived at the part of the show where the panel of peril compete for precious points on the perilous leaderboard. Each member gets one vote, which equals 1 point, but do remember you cannot vote for yourselves, you saucy babies.
saucy Muppet babies.
Oh, I missed a trick there. I always miss those tricks, don't I? I miss jelly babies.
Oh, yeah. Even
know this one. Damn your eyes. Our task this week is to find the titular treasure on the titular island before escaping safely with our ill-gotten gains. So, let's do this! Let's begin with our special guest, Nemone.
Well, you know, we covered the cannibalism aspect, that we've brought in a bit of potential. There was some cannibalism on the cards there, getting the Swedish chef in. So that sort of leads me to posit here a possible improvement to the villainy within Muppet Treasure Island. And possibly even Treasure Island. I could even improve. I could go so far as to say I could improve on Robert Louis Stevenson's timeless classic novel. What if we brought in the appearance of another unconvincing creature, a spirit creature, or tumbak, if you will, that which can only be appeased by, and it's going to get a bit gruesome, so maybe this is good, we'll bring a bit more of the blood and gore back in that's been missing from this episode.
Thank you.
That this Muppet episode. You know, maybe the spirit creature can only be appeased by Long John actually cutting out his tongue and offering it to said creature.
Too far.
That's basically it was just an excuse for me to talk about my another. There is a pattern emerging here, I'm aware now, going back to the psychologist at the beginning and the Gonzo thing. But there is a pattern emerging here, which is one of my favourite things ever, was that series, The Terror. Mm-hmm. With Jared Harris. So another story of mutiny.
Mm.
Obviously mutiny is a theme here. You know, men stuck on a boat together, obviously, but I don't know what's going on. I'm paging Dr. Freud as we speak. But I do love that series. As Miss Piggy says, he was a pirate, I was a lady. Just clearly into this sort of thing, but I do genuinely think that's a brilliant series, which is mysterious, and but that creature is rather unconvincing, so that's a little parallel.
It reminded you of a Muppet polar bear.
In fact, that could be an alternative suggestion. So it's a novelization based on the true story of John Franklin and Captain Crozier, etc.
Yeah.
But the creature that emerges at the end of that, there's this kind of spooky creature that's hunting and tracking all of the sailors who are locked into the Arctic ice in this story of the ship, the Terror, that went missing. The creature that you have, it's absolutely terrifying when you don't really see the creature or when you see a flash of the creature.
Yeah.
When you see the creature quite clearly, I think everyone's a bit like, it was okay apart from the creature.
Yeah.
You know, everyone's like, that's the bit that let it down. It's like a sort of giant, unconvincing looking, very bad CGI polar bear.
Mm.
So maybe that could be improved by having a Muppet. So we could actually have the Muppet Terror.
Yeah.
So you could still have Jared Harris. You could have that, all those wonderful, like, indistinguishable, they all look identical, very lovely men on the ship. But just throw some Muppets in there and have a Muppet tumbak.
The one that springs to mind is Mr. Snuffleup, I guess. Obviously a kind of a woolly mammoth.
Yeah, that would be, that's terrifying. That's very uncanny.
Yeah.
Yeah. That would work, I think that would be much better. I think someone should do that now.
Yeah.
And I would love to see that.
So how do you see that going in the Muppet Treasure Island if a tumbak appears? Does John Silver somehow control it?
Yeah, he cuts his tongue out to...
Oh, of course.
He has to cut his tongue out to appease it.
Right, yeah.
It all gets a bit dark at that point, really. Yeah, it all gets a bit dark.
And would you imagine that the tongue in Muppet Treasure Island, which I presume would be a Muppet tongue, would that have a musical number? Would that break into song?
Solo.
Yeah. Just sort of a humming one, probably. More. Disney's called Nemone. You have not got the job taking things forward in the Muppet universe. However, if you could just step into this white coat, people would be able to do away.
Okay, very good. Now let's hear from Adam next, please.
As we see when the crew arrive at Treasure Island, it seems to be a popular place. Not only are there natives, there is a resort for all the rat creatures. We see them enjoying a meal and drinks, and even a water skier and boat. Clearly, there is a thriving tourist destination on the island, and they must be getting there somehow. As Long John sees the Hispaniola about to beach itself, and his band of pirates seeks to remove the treasure by other means, as they jump into their jolly boats and make for sea, in secret, half of Long John's crew have taken control of the huge vessel that is used to carry the rat folk to the island. Sure, most of the cabins on board are a little small, but the boat was crewed by some big Muppets originally, so they have more than enough room, and the cabins of the rat folk serve as convenient storage for the treasure. As the jolly boats reach the tourist boat, the chests of treasure are winched aboard. With the Hispaniola beached and unable to move, the pirates can make good their escape without fear of being followed by Smollett and his crew.
You must have been tired when you watched that, because the rats were on the Hispaniola.
No, there was like rats on the beach watching, sitting, having drinks and eating food and stuff like that, wasn't there? There's like a resort, isn't there? And there was like a rat scuba divers and rat speedboat. Can you not see that?
Yeah, I assume they came on the Hispaniola. Perhaps I'd missed the cruise liner that was parked around the corner.
I thought this was going into a sort of triangle of sadness sort of direction then. So you suddenly find that there is actually a luxury resort just on the other side of the island after having been suffering this potential cannibalism, etc. And you're like, shit, there's a Hilton.
Yeah, that's it. Hilton Cannibal Gardens.
Yeah.
Let's hear Ben's plan next, please.
What Long John lacks in leg, he makes up for in brains, and he's certainly no stranger to the timeless art of romance. So as soon as he discovers Miss Piggy has the treasure, he knows what he must do.
He's already done it.
First, he has Kermit taken away and then skewered and secretly fed to the cruise rats.
Frog's legs.
Exactly. But in order to get away with the treasure and the ship, he's going to need Miss Piggy and the tribe on his side. So he whips out his quill and begins writing. That night, beneath the starry sky, he tells Miss Piggy how much he regrets the breakup of their relationship. And to prove how much he still cares for her, he reads her the following poem. In the heart of the ocean, where the wild winds blow, there's a lass who's got more sparkle than the sun's golden glow. With a snout that's a marvel, a true work of art. Oh, Miss Piggy, you've gone and stolen my heart. With karate chops fierce, you command the stage. Your beauty, your talent, they transcend any age. A diva, a queen in glamorous attire, your presence alone sets my pirate soul on fire. From the deck of my ship under star-studded skies, I dream of the twinkle in those porcine eyes. Your voice is a melody so rich and so clear, rings sweeter than rum to this old buccaneer. Your curls, they cascade like the finest of silk. Your skin, oh, it shimmers as pink milk. In a world full of oysters, you're a pearl without grit. Besides you, Miss Piggy, the Caribbean looks not very good. So here's my proposal. Let's set sail for the stars. We'll conquer the seas, the moon, even Mars. With you as my co-captain, we'll navigate fate. Miss Piggy, my love, it is you I celebrate. And after that performance, Miss Piggy will be so besotted with old Long John, she'll do anything he says.
Wouldst thou give me thy dainty hoof in marriage?
Beautiful.
Thank you. So, in a nutshell, he wants to re-woo Miss Piggy.
Romance the pig is what I've written.
Yeah.
Romance the pig, yeah.
Sorry, Michael Douglas.
Yeah.
He'd be good. Muppet falling down.
Oh, yeah. Oh, wow. That'd be quite something.
That could be Gonzo. That's the Gonzo solo.
Oh, yeah.
I think. sorry, Disney's back on the line. They said, like, we've had second thoughts.
wouldn't the journey be great? Because you kind of expect it from Gonzo, but the journey from Fozzie, from where he is to that kind of breaking point, would be
true.
Beautiful.
I think...
Shit happens. Waka waka.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Okay. Any more questions for Ben?
Nope.
We usually argue a lot more than this, Nomini. Everybody's bringing their A game this week.
Oh, God.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm not. You can argue with me. Don't worry.
Okay, great. Looking forward to it.
Well, I was thinking about the thing about Long John being, you know, having the charm and being romantic. Actually, he does have this woman, his woman back on shore, who looks after all his riches for him, and who... the implication being that they're going to, like, go and settle down and run a little inn together. But at the end of the novel and in the end of The Muppets, there is the potential for Long John to come back. So there is potential for a sequel here.
Yeah.
Maybe Long John running his pub or something with his with his woman.
They could have called it Faulty Beach Hut or something.
Yes, exactly. Faulty Jolly Boat.
Yeah. Let's move on and hear Craig's plan, please.
Jim Hawkins be a good lad and true. Old Long John can see that. And, as an orphan, he be looking for father figures everywhere. Family is what he values, and the crew, motley though they be, are his family. A fight for the lad's soul it is. And so, though it be a frightful business, every soul on that vessel competing for his loyalty must perish. Trelawney trusted old Long John to select the crew himself, and so he has an ace in the hole, of a diabolic nature. Not 2 nights into the voyage do the crew enjoy peace, afore the Grim Reaper comes calling for Mr. Arrow. Dr. Livesey be baffled at first, no sign of stabbing nor dysentery. The next night, a fresh cadaver, white as spearmint and cold as the briny. The captain. Now, the good doctor sees a pattern. Both men exsanguinated, flesh dry as felt cloth. He thinks too late to warn the men to keep a night watch, for now the ship be shrouded in fog, the hidden sun dull as tarnished silver. 'Tis the doctor himself taken next, and no better father left now for young Jim than old Long John, who'll now save the crew from the mysterious blight and gain the loyalty of all. As he tallies the victims, 1, 2, 3, The treacherous silver drives his wooden crutch through the heart of his former accomplice, Count von Count.
This is good. This is good. This is very nice. Close to I the like spirit it. Of the novel.
Mm, yeah.
Because that's the thing about Long John. Lang Pew might be a bit more terrifying, but Long John has got some kind of weird supernatural baddie skills, and the crutch is key. Because there's this bit in the novel where he's trying to, like, persuade poor Tom to join the mutiny, and Tom refuses. So Tom walks away and Long John's there, and Jim is watching this from the bushes. And he says, John seized the branch of a tree, whipped the crutch out of his armpit, and sent that uncouth missile hurtling through the air. It struck poor Tom point foremost and with stunning violence right between the shoulders in the middle of his back. His hands flew up, he gave a sort of gasp and fell. Like enough to judge from the sound, his back was broken on the spot. Silver, agile as a monkey, even without leg or crutch, was on top of him next moment and had twice buried his knife up to the hilt in that defenceless body.
Mm.
So, I mean, he literally threw the crutch and broke his back. You know, I think there is this sort of veering towards the uncanny and the supernatural in lots of these things as well.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking a lot about the Demeter as soon as I thought of Count von Count, my favourite Muppet.
It's a great quote as well. The only shame is that it backs up Craig's version of events, which, you know.
Yeah, I know. I have just given that some weight.
You've handed him that. So I'm going to try and tear him down now with one question.
Knock him down.
One question only.
Okay.
What are the Count's teeth made of?
I guess felt, like the rest of the Muppets.
So can felt penetrate more felt?
Yeah, I mean,
I'm not a felt expert, so if you say yeah, I'll believe you. If you're lying, you won't be able to sleep tonight.
We're not talking physics here; we're talking verisimilitude. So, within the universe of the Muppets, a Muppet vampire must be able to penetrate the felt flesh of another Muppet. Otherwise, how does Count von Count live?
It's a good point.
Yeah.
Materials have different GSMs, don't they? I'm not sure what GSM stands for, but I know that's the case. So I reckon felt could penetrate felt based on its GSM.
All right.
Grams per square meter.
Could be. Could be. Mm-hmm. I'll put it in the show notes.
Oh, yeah. All the Peril Pals listening at home are really going to be
that's what they
scrambling for that. Really
Dropping their phones.
What's the thread count? What's the thread count?
Okay. Was there any more questions for Craig before I reveal my masterpiece?
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, let's get your nonsense out of the way.
Yeah. Let's do it. Long John Silver hobbles onto the set of the Española and does a big hmm with his index finger placed firmly on his lower lip. Hmm, he reiterates, although we now detect a hint of sarcasm about the fellow. He slowly turns his gaze from the starboard to the stern and declares, "You there! Yes, you!" A quizzical look comes across my face. "Yes, you, Gareth Slade. I'm talking to you. I've seen you watching this film, and so I reckon you have a pretty good idea of where that booty is." I look behind myself, wondering if this is still part of the movie, or has the fourth wall well and truly been shattered? Gonzo has already asked us, how else did you expect us to get him into the movie, in reference to the Swedish chef? And the tour group goes through the set of Muppet Treasure Island, so something weird is definitely going on, okay? Don't question it. I'll give you some lovely salted caramel hard lollipops if you tell me where the treasure is, lad, says John. I think about it for all of about 3 seconds. Show me the lollies first, I instruct the Swedish chef. He shows me a packet of two. Yes, that's two salted caramel lollipops. Well, you don't have to tell me twice. I pony up the info to John, allowing him and his men to simply lob all of the Muppets overboard before sailing away with the treasure they're about to easily locate and claim. And most importantly, I have the lollipops.
Am I right in thinking that you've been sitting on this one for some time? I remember you a few seasons back mentioning that you had an all-purpose brilliant plan for any occasion, and I'm wondering if this was it. Yeah.
My deus ex machina.
Yeah.
Me being the deus.
That's it. That's your tum back.
They break the fourth wall a lot, don't they?
They do. It's in the style of the Muppets, for sure. Yeah.
What would you do if Miss Piggy had broken the fourth wall first? Was coming on to you.
Oh, my Lord. What would I have done? I would have...
Is this a real life question now? What would I do if Miss Piggy was coming on to me?
You can't know until it happens.
No. Exactly. My instinct is just to run straight through the wall.
Yeah, she knows karate, doesn't
like
she, after
Looney Tune?
Very much like Kermit, then.
Yeah.
You have got a bit of Kermit about you, actually, now you say that. I think it's the mouth.
Kermit protests too much, you know. Look at the family they have in Christmas Carol. They've got like 8 kids, right?
Yeah.
Some are pigs and some are frogs.
As it should be.
Those plans were absolutely and unequivocally diabolical. We had Nemone's twist, which had a Muppet version of the Terror. Adam's plan, which saw John commandeering a cruise liner. Ben's plan, which had John writing some delightful poetry to win over Miss Piggy to get the booty. Craig's plan, which got the legendary Count von Count in on the action, like aboard the Demeter from another famous novel. And my plan, which saw me, your humble host, helping Long John Silver in exchange for some wobby pops. And so, if we could all cast our votes for who we thought was the best plan, we'll begin by seeing who Nemone voted for, please.
Well, I think all equally compelling in various ways, but I'll probably go for the poetry because I feel like I should, and I feel like there is the potential to have a spin-off sitcom with Long John and Miss Piggy in Faulty Bowels or whatever it's called.
Thank you very much.
You've got the job.
One on the board for Ben, so let's hear whom Ben casts his vote for.
Well, I went for the plan that had, in my mind, the best reveal, which was Craig's Count von Count.
Oh, thank you.
Well, let's hear who Craig casts his vote for.
Well, this was a genuinely tough choice because I really liked a lot of these.
Yeah.
But I'm the Terrace super fan, so I've voted for Nemini Silver Tongue.
Very good.
Get the tongue out!
Okay, let's hear who Adam casts his vote for.
Well, please. It's been a really good episode, super guest episode, with not one, not two, not three, but four plans. Ha, ha, ha. So I voted for Greg.
Oh, well done.
I think it was a good
well
one. Yeah.
Well, that just leaves me to reveal my vote. And, do you know, I love a bit of poetry. So, based on that, I've cast my vote for Ben.
Oh, it's a tie.
Thank you very much.
Oh, I thought it was another one for me. It's for Ben. Okay.
So that brings the final scores to a tie. 2 points, two votes each for Ben and Craig. Nemini with one vote, and myself and Adam with El Zilcher.
Yeah, I deserve that. Mine wasn't in the spirit.
Well deserved.
God. Yeah.
Happy to it.
I'm happy not to go home empty-handed.
Well, that will do us for another batch of evil schemes, but we will return for another dose of podcasting and pontification. We'd like to thank our special guest, Nemini, for taking the time to join us and share her evil scheme too.
Thank you.
That was great.
Nemini, is there anything that you'd like to plug before we say our farewells?
Gosh, plugging away things. Well, actually, speaking of adventure and trying to get to grips with all the different parts of the boat and the names of things, that's probably one of the writers I work with who's written closest to the genre of Treasure Island adventure, but also other things, is someone called Toby Vieira. Was a bit mysterious. He wrote a novel called Marlowe's Landing, which I think is really worth looking at. And he's got a new novel forthcoming, which is equally okay, brilliant. But Marlowe's Landing is... Toby does know a lot about real-life political detail, and it's very sort of international, and the detail is brilliant on that. And it does involve journeying up the Amazon, so it has all of that kind of adventure to it, but it's also hilarious with some brilliant villains and baddies and very strange supernatural characters in it. So I would always give a plug to Marlowe's Landing, because I think Toby is just a brilliant writer and a brilliant mind, so love him. Shout out to Toby Vieira and Marlowe's Landing.
Pop something in the show notes as well.
Yeah, I will actually put that in the show notes as well. Yeah. My joke is that it's show notes suggestion. Yeah. Okay. Well, there are more specials on the way soon, but until then, remember, everything will be all right in the end, and if it isn't all right, then it isn't the end.
Next week, Pendejo, we're back to our regularly scheduled episode number 90, Highlander.